Steve Sherlock Manella, Franklin Matters Radio Show. This session of the radio show shares my Talk Franklin conversation with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Anne-Marie Tracy. We had our conversation via conference bridge to adhere to the social distancing requirements of this pandemic period. We talk about the new temporary town clerk appointment and the election prep that is underway, municipal aggregation, and how you can opt out of savings, or automatically you are opted in, as well as there's a waiting list for NextSAMP and the solar project, micro enterprise grants. The applications are available for those small businesses with up to 5 employees. The business listening sessions start Wednesday, September 30th. It's the first of a series, and we cover those. The Think Blue winners are coming out this week. And links to the key topics covered here are included in the show notes. The recording runs around 40 minutes. So let's listen to my conversation with Jamie and Anne-Marie. So Steve Sherlock for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM, anywhere on the internet via your browser, and 102.9 in the Franklin area FM radio dial. Here for another Talk Franklin session with our town administrator, Jamie Helen, and marketing communications specialist, Anne-Marie Tracy. Good afternoon, folks, and welcome.
Hey, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Beautiful day.
Happy Friday.
Friday is always a good day.
There's nothing wrong with Fridays. And the school kids with a half day and then nothing Monday, they're going to be having fun.
Yes.
But you don't have that on the town side, so you'll just be doing what you need to do.
We always have fun.
Always have something
That's
to do.
That's true.
We do. Indeed. I think we're breaking out for that. Yeah.
Definitely.
So I think one of the key topics since we talked last time was the announcement around the temporary town clerk, Nancy Dinello, taking the role, and then you made some other minor adjustments within the personnel to help prepare for November.
Yeah. Wow. That was a lead in, Steve. So yeah, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean,
there is. We can take some time.
You know, it's going to take I mean, I've said this to, you know, a lot of folks in town have called me or emailed me, and, you know, I am going to expand, but I am also need everybody to understand, you know, I'm going to do my best Bill Belichick here. You know, we're on to Cincinnati. A lot of this we can go back and hammer out and discuss and whatnot. And I'll talk a little bit about it, the debrief today. But, you know, the bottom line is we have to look forward to the next game. And the next game is on November 3rd. And then there's an additional game after that on December 5th for a special town council seat. So, you know, I've been doing a little bit of this. You know, Nancy will, the temporary town clerk, will come out and do a little bit more, you know, in a couple weeks before early voting at some other key times. We'll talk about some of the outreach in a minute. But, you know, our focus is completely on doing whatever it takes to make sure that the November 3rd election runs off with a hitch, without a hitch. And that also, you know, I think people, especially given today's media culture where everybody gets news and information from very fragmented sources, kind of establishing a true comfort in our election system. You know, if I had to go back, and I think there was a lot of things to unpackage here, I would say in the debrief with a lot of our department heads, there's a lot of improvements that can be made. You know, I think the first is to acknowledge, you know, this is a tough election year for everybody.
Right.
You know, the legislature passed a law around the 4th, beginning of July, relative to mail-in voting, changed between them and the Secretary of Commonwealth, changed some of the little intricacies and rules, and you know, it was a lot of information to keep up with for sure. And you know, as I said to the Boston Globe, you know, a couple of weeks ago when they called me about you know, Ms. Burr's resignation, I gave them an honest reply, which is, you know, I sincerely hope that this one event does not, you know, overlook her 5 years of service to the town. Actually, longer than that, 5 years as clerk, I think another 3 years in the office. So, you know, Teresa, over the course of time, you know, had brought in online permitting, which didn't exist in the office before, you know, new voter machines and poll pads at the time to deal with early voting, right?
Yep.
To get people through the lines easier and quicker with driver's licenses. And those are no small feats. You know, there was a lot of improvements. Another one that tips off the top of my head where we had worked with the new superintendent to have that be a professional development day so that the parking was available on election day.
Yeah.
You know, in hindsight, these things, I think, get a little lost because we're so focused and hyped up with what's going on right now in front of us. But when you look back, those were some adaptations that we made in working, you know, both with my office and the superintendent and others, you know, that Teresa really put forward. And so I hope that this one event doesn't, you know, overshadow at all, you know, her achievements or the office's achievements over the last several years to really upgrade the office. I'd say that at the end of the day, I think when we look at the cause and the problem, I think at the end of the day, everybody down there was working hard. Everybody, there's clear consensus among a lot of the voter advocacy groups that are out there, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, people that are not from town that are objective viewers in here looking in and saying what's going on. It's very clear the consensus is that there really was no ill will or malfeasance here, that there was just a situation where there was a lot of work to do. You know, maybe some of the small preparations that needed to be done, you know, early on didn't get done. And I think at the end of the day, it was one of those things where the volume in a primary like this just kind of avalanche on the election. And I think there was clearly some staff burnout toward the end. You know, we've all been there in our lives where we've worked hard 12-hour, 13, 14-hour days, 6-7 days a week. And and you do get a little weary. You know, you do, your judgment does at times lack. You do forget things. You do try to cut a corner or two that maybe you shouldn't. And so, you know, I think that's just the reality of the situation. And it came in the year of 2020, which is just a year of heightened, emotion. So I did appoint Nancy last week on September 18th to take over the temporary clerk position until the next regularly scheduled election. I did put in the letter the statutory references that did give me that legal authority. If you read the town charter, it's pretty clear that section in there defaults to state law. And, you know, it defaults to state law for a reason, because elections are actually really run by the Secretary of the Commonwealth. The 351 municipal and city clerks are really just the ones doing the work on their behalf.
Yeah, they all most have a nice dotted line, direct line almost.
It is. I mean, as it was pointed out to me, as somebody who really didn't, you know, because of the nature of that relationship, you know, a lot of staff never really worked on elections like this and know all the ins and outs. And
sure.
I certainly knew a lot from previous jobs, but there's a very unique relationship in law as outlined by the town attorney, Mark Sorrell. You know, there's a unique relationship that doesn't really exist with other offices in town because, on a very consistent basis, you know, the role of the clerk's office is to run the election on behalf of the Secretary of Commonwealth.
Mm-hmm.
I would say that, moving forward, you know, we do have a lot of things that are, some are still in the works, but there are some things to highlight. We did reassign two members of our staff full time to go over and assist. Both Melissa from the ZBA and Patty Wiley from the Treasurer's Office are over helping, answering phone calls, answering emails, basic questions, getting some of the voter registration cards processed. All the wardens are over there right now, pretty much full time. Doing what they do in terms of sorting by precinct and getting ready for all the white cards to request a mail-in ballot. So we've bolstered the staff. We are taking the furloughed library employees, and we've offered them their part-time employment to assist through the election cycle for the next six weeks.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah.
It was a great idea. And they were really excited. I mean, all of them just jumped on board with it. In fact, a couple of them mentioned that they called up and said they weren't going to work the polls. They wanted to work on election day. And so it was great. So we're all the additional administrative and executive support. We are going to come out with a calendar beginning on October 9th, all the way through November 2nd, where we will have expanded evening hours and on weekends and even on Columbus Day to open the drive-through window so that citizens in town who get a mail-in ballot at home can hand-deliver their ballot safely through the drive-through window. The after-hours white box will obviously remain there, but we're going to re-letter it so that people are really clear that that's
It's not just for the business side. It's also for clerk business as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We did hire the assistant. One was through the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office. We are hiring a current town clerk from another town to assist on a one-day-a-week basis through the election.
Okay.
And we did put on retainer a former town clerk, Marie Crimmins from Foxborough, to come in to do, essentially – some oversight, which she does with a lot of communities. She's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Marie has actually already come into the office to kind of look at our systems and has actually given us a good bill of health.
Right.
I think a lot of the things that were there, just needed a few tweaks. Another example of that, Steve, is on October 25th, legally, we are allowed under law. These are the little tweaks that are changing.
Sure.
In the primary. But we're allowed under law, and we were allowed to do this in the primary, and for some reason this didn't happen, but we are allowed under the law on October 25th to actually do the duty of opening the actual envelope and putting the ballots face up into piles by precinct.
Okay.
And on October 31st to November 2nd, there will be hours that the voting place will be open. This is after early voting. There will be public viewing hours, and these are allowed again by statute.
Okay.
These are designed by the legislature and the secretary. We're just using all the tools in the toolbox.
Correct. To process those mail votes.
To process those mail-in ballots before November 3rd.
Sure.
And so we want to get through as many of those as possible for a lot of reasons that
I don't
think I need to explain.
No.
The most notable reason is that when the machine spits out numbers at 9 o'clock that night,
they should
it has
have it
the
all.
Most votes possible.
Absolutely.
I would note, and I will editorialize a little here because I'm not so sure I agree with this, but I get it. If votes were postmarked on the 3rd, mail-in, and they're in the post office, and they get to us 2 days later, they are to be counted by statute.
Correct, yeah.
So the number on November 3rd...
is unofficial.
Is unofficial, which is typical.
That's typical, absolutely,
but, it does give a couple more days for all those votes to be counted, which is phenomenal. And that's, I think, where the legislature ended up siding, correct?
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand... you know, it's going to leave this ambiguity of for a couple of days until we know all those.
How many and where are they, et cetera.
Which makes that three-day period critical.
Yeah.
And if you were at the recount, which I was until 1:45 in the morning, or the count, rather.
I stopped in a couple of times, but I couldn't stay all day.
You saw that public viewing place.
Oh, yeah.
It was a huge area.
Absolutely.
And we had 20 reporters there until 1:45 from the Boston Globe to NPR to WBUR. We had voting advocates, Mass Vote, Common Cause. All those groups were in the seats watching that count, as they should. We want the same thing. So the public will know. We don't have the exact hours set yet. Those will be set on the line. But
agreed.
But I want to make sure people know that they can come in on that Saturday, Sunday, or Monday and watch the mail-in ballots go into the ballot box. We'll have teams of 4 to 5, assembly lines doing ballot by ballot. And so I think, looking back, just a couple tools in the toolbox maybe weren't used. And again, to that avalanche analogy, it just kind of piled up. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, as Ms. Burr said in the newspaper, it was a human error. You know, yeah. all these little things lead up to a human error that we all do.
Right.
You know, it just happened to be the wrong error at the wrong time.
No. And then just to my understanding, and I've certainly talked with Nancy and Teresa over the years in prep for each of the elections we've had while I've been doing this and even prior. And yeah, so I understand that process. And I also know that during the day of the vote, they'll feed in those, either the early ballots or the absentee ballots. We haven't had so many mail-in ballots, but to the extent that you can do that in the couple of days before, then the day of November 3rd, certainly is going to be one of our, based on what we're seeing, it's going to be one of the largest turnouts Franklin ever had. We certainly had that with the primary. That was double what we had done going back to 2002. So
it was over the summer, COVID, you know, there was challenges there. I mean, you know, and as I said in the newspaper, I think a few weeks ago, I mean, it really, I think a lot of clerks and a lot of offices were using the primary as a trial run to test their systems and see what improvements need to be made. And, you know, so we really went through a pretty thorough debrief with all the relevant department heads. There's a lot of other smaller things we're doing. I'll just give a quick example, but in the past, you know, we'd had all the DP, we'd had all the vending, all the equipment stored at the DPW or in the clerk's office. And I just, you know, would take the opportunity to thank the superintendent and Josh. You know, I've been pushing for years to try to have the voting equipment in the high school. So the transportation of that equipment is just smooth and easy.
Mm-hmm.
We do it for the high school graduation.
Right.
You know, I mean, the custodians do an amazing job and our facility staff getting the gym ready for high school graduation. And that's what we're trying to mirror here with the election. It's just another thing on the list of things the clerk's office has to remember to coordinate. But if we can take some of these logistics off their shoulders,
mm-hmm.
and place them in the people that have had experience doing this for a long time,
sure.
I think it'll make the system a lot smoother and a lot more efficient and maybe a little more relaxed. So we don't get the burnout that we had over the summer. Obviously the additional staff is going to relieve the burnout as well. But I think, you know, empowering some of these other departments to facilitate this stuff will be big. Another small example of this is we have the chief of police running the enforcement of the 150-foot zone, making sure that people aren't harassed on the way into the polls, making sure that there's plenty of spaces in the first three rows or four rows for voters during early voting. So that's another thing that, you know, we're trying to get other department heads involved, because the police know how to scope out the high school for virtually anything. They've done this a million times for a lot of events, everything from, you know, major politicians coming there that are, you know, to major events and sports tournaments and being worried about various things around, you know, when there were shootings around the country and other,
mm-hmm.
they really know this stuff. They're the experts in this. So let's give that to them and have them make sure that the 2 weeks of early voting and election day are harassment free, that everybody's playing by the rules, making sure the parking is laid out appropriately. We work with the school department and Steve and the other folks that we need to.
Correct.
On those types of things, on signage, coordinating all that. They coordinate signage with the DPW and signs by CAN or maybe some other vendors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's another thing that we leave the expert to that to do that. And we don't have to necessarily have that responsibility fully on the clerk's head,
right.
which I think was another thing in this very tight timeline, like you pointed out, of so many votes, right? Because of the sheer volume in a very, very short time frame. You know, let's use all the tools in the toolbox and the resources that we have internally to get these things done. I could talk about a list of literally, Steve, a dozen to a dozen and a half of smaller things that I think that will make a huge difference in making sure that this election goes off.
The project plan list is not enormous, but there's a lot of key steps. And from my understanding of the electoral process, and I think we've talked here before, but back in the mid-90s, that was the reason that I came to Massachusetts, came back to Mass, because I was working on the project for Unisys with the Secretary of Commonwealth's office to install VIRIS.
I remember we talked about this.
The voter registration system. Yeah. So, yeah, I met Debbie Pellegrini at the time with the other 350 clerks. I got to know them as we installed, I forget, it was over 400 systems. Yeah. And I know there's a dedicated line between the municipal building and Ashburton Place. It is not on the internet. Because at the time, one of my techs ginned up our own kind of alert system because we didn't have the tools. This was, you know, mid-90s. This was before cell phones. Mm-hmm. So we had a little routine. So he would ping all the lines and then come back with a report. And the report, if the report came out positive, meaning no lines were down at 11:45, we could go to lunch. If we had a report, then we had to figure out, do we have to fix it or do we wait till after lunch, right? So,
but yeah, you'll be not surprised to know as well, one of the other things on the list is Nancy Dinello did request two more lined computers from the Secretary of State's office, and they'll be out in the next week to install two more computers. So the public knows we have three that are hardwired to the state, and now we're going to have five.
Right.
We're almost doubling our capacity
to
be able to process mailing cards and other work that needs to get done. Voter registration as well. Voter registration still continues, so I think October 24th. So that's another feature that those extra two computers will be left. And unbeknownst to us, all we had to do was ask, I guess.
Yeah, because the initial allocation was done by the secretary based upon population and clerk requirements, et cetera, but they probably haven't changed since we installed them once upon a time.
They probably haven't changed much. And Nancy literally just asked, and they said, yep, we'll approve two more, and we'll give them to you for free, and we'll be out in a week and a half to install them.
Oh, good.
I mean, you know, it's just, again, I think, hopefully the listener at home realizes this is just a tiny action item that's going to make a huge difference.
Right.
Right. And that when you kind of fail to make that inquiry, there isn't a bigger problem out there. This isn't about political party. This isn't about, you know, national politics. This isn't about any of this stuff. This was just simply making an inquiry to the Secretary of State. We're really swamped. We have 26,000 registered voters for three computers. Could we get another computer? And then they said, yep, here's two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that will make a huge difference, I think, over the course of the next couple months.
Absolutely.
So, you know, again, I have a laundry list of 3 pages long with all these little things that we're trying to do. But it's all critical because at the end of the day, for the average listener that's listening to your show at home, they need the comfort, not just assurance, but the comfort, the mental comfort that their ballot went into the drive-thru window, the white box, through the mail on election day, and that their vote was unquestionably counted and counted accurately.
Yeah, and even from the primary perspective, the process worked, albeit late, but every vote was counted, and the secretary confirmed that. So
every vote was counted, and as I clearly articulated in the newspaper for some that may not have read it, you know, the clerk's office absolutely called me at midnight, let me know what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
My phone rang. I was asleep after watching a boring basketball game. And you know, let me know what happened. And they said, we got to call the Secretary of Commonwealth in the morning, 8:30. We were all there and they called him up and we did the right process moving forward. So every vote was counted. I can assure that because I watched it for about 9 hours in the gym until 1:45 in the morning. It was, you know, it's a night you don't want to have to go through. But on the other hand, it makes you feel like it does me. It's just astonishing because the safety net is there.
Correct.
For these kind of mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's, I can't emphasize that enough to the general public. The safety net is in the system. It's in your town charter. If there's an incident like this, it's in state law to protect everybody's ballot and everybody's vote to make sure it was counted.
Yeah.
You know, this is not the only time this has happened in Massachusetts history. It probably won't be the last. These things happen. But the important part is the systems are in place to make sure that every vote is counted and that the system is there to, in design, to be protective of voting rights. And that's something that people shouldn't sniff at. That's a big deal.
No, it is. It is indeed. And all the more important because of all the things that are going on. We'll leave aside for this show because we don't need to go there.
Yes.
But we do have municipal aggregation communications coming. Shifting topic.
You know, great news, right? I mean, two things. I mean, I'm not going to go way out of the way here and pat ourselves on the back, but I'm proud in this time and era, especially while we've seen things like the water rates have had to go up because of the water treatment plant project and stuff.
Right.
You see that $40 extra a year that might be getting paid out of people's pockets to the treatment plant, which I think most people will agree is a worthwhile project to have a new water treatment plant and two new wells that ensure we have enough water adequacy for emergency purposes and suppression for your own showers and home and fire. But, you know, here's a way where we're trying to work on the other end that maybe doesn't always get as much play, where we're actually trying to save people some money at home too. So municipal aggregation, people actually, as of this show, should be starting to get cards in the mail. What people are going to receive is an opt-out card. And the opt-out means that if you opt out, you will be defaulting to a higher basic service rate of about a penny and a half per kilowatt higher than the rate that the town negotiated on everybody's behalf.
Mm-hmm.
Additionally, the town rate being 1.5 cents per kilowatt less also comes from 100% wind energy, renewable energy RECs.
Yeah.
And while people may not know the energy system, and hopefully, you know, it is one of the most complicated things in America, the germane point is that the energy that's coming through for this 3-year contract is coming from all renewable energy, which for those in town should be a good thing. And we were able to save taxpayers money. So, you know, if people opt out, that's what's going to happen. We got a great website that's up with all the information. There's a direct line to our consultant. People should call that number at Colonial Power.
Mm-hmm.
A dedicated line just for Franklin residents for questions. The number one question I've gotten all week has been about the Next Stamp deal,
yep.
Which is another project.
Which has already got a wait list too. So that's oversubscribed. Already got a wait list.
But also, this is another project that we worked on with the Spring Street Solar developer.
Right.
As part of the agreement we came up with them. And they're giving 800 accounts, households, if you will, an additional 15% off of their electricity bills if they tapped into the energy that's produced from the solar farm up on the side of Spring Street. So people really, you know, have a variety of resources here that have been done on their behalf that have given them some opportunities to save on their electricity bills through the winter. The last kind of message that, you know, always comes out is this is not the time, because the rate's lower, to use more electricity.
No.
You know, this is a time to reflect a little bit on your electricity use at home and also realize that you could save even more money on your bills if you really evaluate quickly your own electricity use and making sure all the lights are shut off and all those things.
Sure.
And do a mass save audit and do all these other things that most homeowners should do to try to be able to save those electricity costs. So it's a win-win for everybody in town for the winter. We hope people take a little bit of time to get more involved and a little bit more understanding of it. And be sure to pick up the phone or email Colonial Power if anybody has any questions on the municipal aggregation. And that will start as of your billing cycle on November 1st.
Yeah, I think this should be an exciting announcement to the extent that clearly we've talked of various efficiencies in the town, certainly go into digital, online processing, et cetera. But this is an efficiency you've done on our behalf. And instead of just having a less of a charge, we actually see in our own invoice from National Grid, less money going out to them from our own pockets. So, I mean, that helps reinforce it on two fronts.
It really does. And, you know, I hope at some point, You know, it's just, costs are going to be maneuvering through this whole pandemic up and down on a whole variety of commodities and services, right? And I hope people at least are aware that their town government, all of our department heads and experts are really monitoring these things as best we can. And when we get the opportunity to get a good deal, we take it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And next up, in terms of a good deal for those small business owners in town, businesses defined, I believe, with 5 or less employees, they're potentially eligible for this micro-enterprise grants you're now communicating.
So the micro-enterprise grants are a competitive grant. We got together with 6 towns in the area. Bellingham took the lead for us. We were awarded, $700,000 or $800,000 to do a variety of things. Part of the grant were financial assistance to food pantries. That was required, which is a good thing, you know.
Absolutely.
And then there's about another $500,000 to $600,000 that'll be split between the 6 communities for about $90,000 to $100,000 a piece to help businesses with basically free cash. No loan, no payback, direct financial assistance. Businesses who have 5 or fewer employees. We've had about 57 applications already.
Oh, good.
Some of those clearly do not qualify. You know, for various things like because they serve alcohol or.
Oh.
That to me is, this doesn't blow up, but to me, that's just a direct problem with Congress. Well,
the details are in the application, so you can figure out what your chances are.
Yeah, unfortunately, things like that are frustrating because, you know, La Cantina Winery is a great example of someone who qualify, but because they serve alcohol, they don't.
I think Ouch.
I particularly believe that's incredibly insulting to
local business owners. Yeah, from their educational aspect as well, too, with the wine school. So, yeah, that's weird.
It's just a state federal thing about alcohol.
Yep.
It's just like, come on, let's move on here.
Well, so this grant would have had to come through ABCC or something?
Came through the DHCD. It came through the Department of Housing and Community Development. And so, I get it, but, businesses like this, even smaller stores, pizza shops, mm-hmm. Mac City, they all may qualify, but if they had a beer and wine license, they may not qualify.
Ouch.
I just think at some point the federal and state governments kind of get over this kind of colloquial Puritan attitude about what business is, because the market is clearly showing us a differentiation between what they're putting out in these grant programs and what they're not.
Mm-hmm.
The good news is though, for a bunch of other businesses in town, the ones that are 2 or 3 people, employees, or true mom and pop stores that may only have their family, maybe a family business, they may be able to qualify and get some cash assistance directly by Thanksgiving. And so people should go on the town website, look for that. We've got a lot of applications already. And if you haven't thrown your hat in the ring or you know another business that has 5 or 3 mm-hmm. employees, let them know.
Sure.
And call up our office in the town administrator's office and ask for Chrissy. Chrissy Welton's running this program on our behalf. And, hopefully by the time we get to the colder winter weather, we'll have some recipients out there with some cash flow. And for some of them, this might be able to pay a couple months rent and be able to get them to the other side. So, we're looking forward to getting that money out the door soon.
Every little bit helps.
Every little bit helps, absolutely.
Yep. And along that business line, and furthering the economic development, MAPC, the Metro Area Planning Council, had done their market study, and now you've got the series of listening sessions starting this Wednesday.
Yeah. This is exciting. I think that, this September 30th at 6:30, right?
Yep.
Yes, it is.
Downtown Franklin businesses, Franklin Crossing businesses, and the Franklin Cultural District businesses will be the first in a series of 5 forums to talk about ideas and experiences and listen and build some networks. Vic Amory told me today we've got about 3 dozen people or folks that are already signed up. And we're just there actually for one night to listen. The Economic Development Subcommittee, Melanie Hamlin, Glenn Jones, Brian Chandler, Andy Basanti will be there. I'm sure others will be as well. I believe Jeff Roy has reserved a space, and hopefully he'll be able to attend and just be able to you know, after 6 months of COVID now, we head to the winter, you know, we think now is a really opportune time to listen to some folks about what we may or may not be able to do, many different types of businesses in town. Anne-Marie, what are the other four sessions in October and beyond?
So the next session in October is on the 19th for restaurants, hotels, and hospitality. That's actually on a Monday night, which we did purposefully because many restaurants, that's a night off. So we thought that that might be a better day to be able to capture some of them when they wouldn't be busy at their establishments. November 16th is retail, personal services, and fitness. And personal services obviously is a pretty wide-ranging topic. So a lot of business will fall under that. December 9th is industrial parks and manufacturing, and January 13th is real estate, construction, and housing. And just a little side note on the meetings, we're doing the RSVP because I think it helps us better plan and prepare.
Sure.
But you don't have to RSVP if you decide you would like to attend. The links are on our website, on the town calendar, the agenda, that you can certainly attend even if you haven't RSVP'd. You certainly still can, but it's not, you don't have to be signed up in order to be part of the discussion.
Good. Yeah, I've shared them and I'll continue to do so. And I think as we've talked here, I'll also be doing some other pieces. I've got an interview in queue that'll come out that'll help from one of the owners of a business in the Crossing area. And I'll continue to try and do that to help foster some of the discussion that we're going to be going forward. Because if anything, one way to look at it is this helps us define Franklin in the new normal. Right. Some of it may happen easily. Some of it may take a little longer, but let's figure out what that's going to be.
And I think get an idea of what, you know, we don't expect every business or every citizen to know whether it's federal government, state government, local government, whether it's something legal, illegal. How do you get a permit? How do you get a license from this person up at the state? Mm-hmm. You know, but I think that's why we want to hear from people so that we can try to, you know, maybe focus in on a handful of things that maybe the town council could do, or maybe there's some good input for the state legislators as they go back in January.
Yep.
And they do a bill filing deadline. We've found, Anne-Marie and I found a bunch of ideas, and it came out of that market study, Steve, you know, with the QR code and the discussion of brochures and the placemat, and just, you know, it added to our list of things that we might be able to do that might make a difference. And so I think that, you know, we're just going to be in a position to try to listen to everything. We're not going to be able to answer everything, but we will be able to listen.
Including
to
that ringing.
Oh, you have another minute for Think Blue, right, Steve? Anne-Marie can talk about Think Blue.
Absolutely.
So the Think Blue contest that we launched back in the end of July has officially wrapped up, and we've been working with Think Blue Massachusetts to collect the entries, and we are going to be mailing out the prizes to the people who participated and who were lucky enough to have their name randomly drawn by Think Blue Massachusetts. So I'll be sending out some $100 Amazon gift cards to some lucky residents who helped us spread the word a little bit about stormwater online. And we're very appreciative of you know, people joining in and taking advantage of it at the same time. But also it's just another way to educate our community on the effects of stormwater, which is something that we've been talking about for a while now.
Yeah, and we'll continue to do so, as I think Jamie said, well beyond our time frames here.
Definitely.
Yeah, because I think even to close the most recent one on, was September 9th was the last stormwater meeting. And I believe the feedback, et cetera, that's going to be in an October or November timeline. It's coming back to the town council, I think.
There's actually a lot of work to be done behind the scenes on the resolutions for these things. There's actually probably going to be a handful of them. And so we're working.
A packet,
It'll be a thick packet. There'll probably be a discussion at the full council first, is my guess.
Sure.
Probably fair. Yeah.
confirm the direction now that it's a subcommittee. Ad hoc's already done its thing. Yeah.
And, we'll try to see what that looks like in November, probably more realistically like November, given what the October 7th calendar looks like. But, there'll be a lot of decisions coming up in November and December for sure. And that doesn't even include, I'm sure, in the next couple episodes, Steve, we'll talk about the FY21 budget. So it's definitely going to be a busy fall. It's, for us in municipal government, people like me, we love this stuff. So it's, it's exciting. I mean, I if you can't get up for this every day, you probably shouldn't be in the business, but every day you wake up and you're just excited about the next challenge. So there's going to be a lot on our plates this year. There's going to be a lot on the public's plates. But we do think that, that we'll rise to the task and we'll have a good year.
Good. Well, I thank you both for your time today. I think this brings us a wrap for this particular session, and I'll be back in a couple of weeks with, I'm sure, a whole set of new topics or continuation of topics, because as you just said, there's no lack of topics. We've got plenty to do.
Always something going on. Lots of stuff.
Busy fall.
Busy fall. We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio, WFPR-FM. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana. Copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. You can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.